I got to label the ears is the problem. So what's with Chris Christie? Suddenly he's not jolly. Well, what do you know?
Live from Jackson, Mississippi to Bridgeport, Connecticut, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on the piano, Jeff Hammond on bass. I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, we travel the Alimentary Canal with best-selling science writer Mary Roach, all the news that isn't, and the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know is provided by PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now, the man who fancies himself a bunny whisperer, it's Michael Feldman.
Yeah.
I talked to him. I know that. They seem to like it.
See, you'll talk to a bunny where you wouldn't talk to a squirrel. The squirrel's got no time for you. You know? They're not interested. There is. But bunnies will sit there and look at you. So I figure they must be thinking something. And that's their end of the conversation, as far as I'm concerned. And I will talk to them. I'm just at that point in my life. Anyone who listens, I will talk. Okay, anyhow, Chris Christie. Let's get back to that. Suddenly not jolly. After his weight loss surgery, New York Governor Chris Christie is down to Delaware Governor. Looks like a painfully thin Chris Christie in 2016, so watch for that. On Syria, President Obama goes with 50 shades of red line. Ooh, oh. Okay, sorry. Getting nowhere with Benghazi, Republicans turn to Ben Gay. The ATM cyber thieves in the process of stealing $45 million in tens. It's going to take a while, and they're almost through with it. The Heritage Foundation, the $6 trillion tag on the immigration bill is actually the cost of sending everybody back. That's what that $6 trillion is. Including the Heritage Foundation. They go back to Dusseldorf. In Jerusalem, the Wailing Wall controversy is solved as women are allowed to use the Kvetching Wall. It's right next to it. It's convenient. That racket here is actually the cicadas all saying, has it been 17 years already? Okay. Samsung has a new, you'll like this one. Samsung has a new phone out, so smart, it carries you around. Blacks voted at a higher rate than whites in 2012. Now, if husbands can outvote their wives, we might get somewhere. No. Don't judge me. These are just quips. You don't judge. Quips are not to be judged. Congress advances a bill to make pay TV pay up the wazoo TV. So let's look for that. And is this on? I think I'm talking to myself. I'm going to talk to the bunnies if this continues. Okay, a sincere version of Springtime for Hitler is staged in Germany. That's a breakthrough for them. The average American now can only retire after he's 10 years dead. Something to look forward to. It's called the like the smell of your own phenomenon, as Americans hate Congress but like their congressmen. Thank you. Someone was shocked. That's from you. Thank you. Right? That was you? Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Leave your name before you leave, because I want to invite you back. Parents who suck their babies' pacifiers risk retaliation by projectile vomit. That's the only thing holding it in, you know. I got news for you. Meanwhile, people with dogs have a reduced risk of cardiovascular disease, but an increased risk of fleas. So, it's go either way, then. Pfizer will now sell Viagra online with misspelled sexually suggestive spam, supposedly from someone you know. That should work. President Obama says we have not yet crossed the red line where he makes the Jacksonville Jaguars take Tim Tebow. Kobe Bryant sues his mom for Mother's Day. That's kind of cute, I thought. Although the damage has been long done, really, for Kobe. With a new law in Minnesota, Minneapolitans can now marry St. Paulists. Stamp prices are up again, so it's worth a run for Congress just for the franking privileges. Franking privileges. That kills them in the post office. Visiting Prince Harry manages to keep his tunic on, but it's only day three. At the movies, it's Great Caesar's Gatsby in 3D, or the Great Kool-Aid Acid Test Gatsby. Actually, though, Fitzgerald did write Gatsby for the Viewmaster. A lot of people don't know that. Intended to be a Viewmaster. And finally here, and I mean finally, here in Wisconsin, Governor Walker will meet with the Dalai Lama to see about getting some of that mandala work here in Wisconsin. That's all the news that isn't. Thank you so much. And okay, back to your home. Nothing to see here. All right. Sand paintings. I've been looking for a little sand painting work, actually. It's steady work. Mary Roach has got a new one out. She is the author of Bonk, Stiff, Spook, and now Gulp. This is the latest one. Adventures on the Alimentary Canal. Mary Roach, Gulp, period, Gulp, period. Because, I mean, it's really not about gulping. It's more about all the other stuff. But you really can't call a book. Because how would you spell it, number one? Mary Roach is online with us from Oakland, California. Hi, Mary. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm pretty good. Got another one-worder here for a one-word book.
We done it again with the one-worder.
Done it again. Has this long been a fascination of yours, the Alimentary Canal and its ramifications?
I like to eat, but I guess I seem to be fascinated with the cruder elements of the human body.
You do. You've shown that before.
There's a little bit of the 12-year-old boy inside me.
Yeah. And, I mean, in doing all this now, you've studied this from one end to the other, basically. Is there one thing that stands out as the most shocking discovery you made on the Alimentary Canal?
Shocking. Well, I don't know if this is shocking. This was gently surprising.
Okay. That's better.
People have two sets of nostrils. You have a set of internal nostrils.
Oh.
In the back of your mouth, they're called the internal nostrils. So there.
That's a lousy name for them. They should have their own name anyhow. They are in the back of your neck? Where are they, around the epiglottis around there or something like that?
Yeah, they're in the back of the mouth. So you can, when you chew your food, or drink your wine, or your gin, in my case. The aromas go up into the nose, so you can thereby appreciate them more fully. So you should be thankful
for
your internal nostrils.
You smell it twice.
You smell it twice.
Smell it again later, actually, too, so it's three times. Three smells per meal. There's been a lot of, tasting food. They say tasting food is not tasting; it's smelling, or that it's even seeing, or that it's hearing. Right?
Yeah.
Where do you fall on this?
Yeah, that's true. The hearing thing is kind of cool. There's this study they did. Those people.
Yeah.
Where they gave people potato chips, mm-hmm. and they had them chew them up, and they had to rate their freshness. And if they put headphones on them, and they secretly, it's like the old Sanka ad. They see like secretly, we've changed the frequency of the sound of these potato chips. So they mask the higher frequency, or they make the chips quieter. And now people will say, oh, these potato chips are stale. These are no good. Mm. So you are kind of eating with your ears.
Yeah, so is that the primary sensation we have when we're eating? We want to get the right crunch, right? Is that?
Yeah, you want the crunch. Crunch is important, I guess, evolutionarily, if that's a word.
It is now.
Yeah. you tend to want to eat crisp, crunchy fruits and vegetables because they're fresh. They're not stale or mushy or rotten or awful. So we're programmed to kind of like crispy, crunchy, and then the snack food people have capitalized on that by making optimally crispy, crunchy foods that, unlike fruits and vegetables, don't have a lot of nutrition, but there you go.
Okay. I'm going to just throw some things at you. There's so much ground covered in your book there. Can I just throw some things at you and get a feedback from you?
Throw them.
Noxious flatus.
Yeah.
Not a Roman emperor.
Did you want me to comment?
Yeah, no, not the joke so much, but that's the best I've done so far this morning, actually.
I like the pay up the wazoo as you go or whatever.
Thank you. Noxious flatus. So, I mean, what can you explain what that is and why and what that means?
That is smelly gas.
Smelly gas.
Okay, and that is because
normal.
That is normal. It's because of hydrogen sulfide, which is a breakdown product of meat, red meat, cruciferous vegetables, your cabbage, your kale, your broccoli, all those.
Oh, yeah.
Those give you the smelly component. Most of your farts are not smelly. Hydrogen,
no,
methane.
I keep saying that.
As long as I've known you.
Yes. Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It's actually a bouquet, isn't it? There's several chemicals involved.
Yes, there is. There's several chemicals. There's three or four of the sulfur compounds that are making things smelly. And there are things that one could do if one was so inclined, although I don't really see why one would be so inclined.
Yeah.
But because most people really have no objection to the smell of their own when you get right down to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there are pills that somebody came up with, and there are special charcoal-lined underwear pads. There are cushions that you can put on your office chair. However, the gastroenterologist that I thought had the best solution was a guy named Dr. Mike Jones, and he said, when I get patients who tell me that they've got a problem with this, I say, get a dog.
And blame the dog.
And blame the dog.
Yeah. No, that works for me. Tina is terrible gas. My puggle. Before we leave this particular subject, how come men do and women don't?
What, have smelly gas?
I mean, have any. Admit it. Men seem to be the only ones who admit it in the universe that we know of.
Is
that true? Has that been verified? Or?
Well, supposedly women have a slightly higher concentration of hydrogen sulfide, so they're supposedly smell a little worse, but I'm not buying this.
No.
I'm just not. It has mostly to do with what you eat, so I think it's kind of hogwash. But anyway, the men make up for this with the larger than average volume of each passage, I believe.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. What'd you say? I was trying to stifle one. Okay, all right. Okay, let's leave that because that's neither here nor there. Stomach snakes.
Yes.
Interesting.
Stomach snakes and stomach frogs and stomach slugs.
All sorts of, mostly amphibians in the stomach or reptiles?
Yeah. This is mostly in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. When people didn't have much of an understanding about what was going on in their interior, and they would interpret pain and rumblings and weird sensations, they would become convinced that they had swallowed some frog or snake eggs and that they had hatched inside them. And you would find these case reports in the medical literature of people who supposedly had a frog living inside them for years and years. And then there, one enterprising physician had an idea of how to debunk this. He took because sometimes the patients would actually come in and say, look here, this is the frog. And I found it one morning in my living room, and I believe this is the one that was inside me, and it must have escaped. And so he looked inside the frog and found partially digested insects, which suggested that, in fact, the frog had not spent the last 3 years inside a human stomach.
Unless the man ate insects as well.
You're just going to be difficult, aren't you?
No, I'm just saying there are possibilities. But, I mean, because there's that boy who coughed up all those frogs, right? That's sort of the record holder for frogs and newts and toads.
Yeah, there was that boy. I forget what the number was, but that was, And that whole, there's the song, the old lady who swallowed the fly.
Oh.
And that was why.
Good. That was the reference I was trying to get in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Alka-Seltzer rockets.
Alka-Seltzer. This is a serious topic. If you tend to overindulge in a very vigorous way, and then you feel horrible and you overdo with Alka-Seltzer, see, this is when you can be in danger of bursting the stomach, because the gas produced by too much Alka-Seltzer could rupture the stomach. It's very hard to burst a human stomach, but if you really want to do it, Alka-Seltzer is the way to go, and you need only consult the internet and see the Alka-Seltzer rocket videos that are out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there an actual rocket involved in that, or is that just an expression?
Yeah, NASA is involved in this. Yeah.
NASA?
NASA, yeah.
Okay.
It's just that you can do it with a little film canister, and, and you can put the Alka-Seltzer in, and the top will blow off, and it's very dramatic.
Okay. Is this the same thing that you referenced in blowing the roof off the hog barn?
No, that has to do with the combustibility of hydrogen and methane, which are the two largest components of flatus, or flatus, as you like to say.
Yeah, is it flatus?
I don't know. I think it's either.
Okay.
I say flatus, you say flatus.
Okay, that's blowing around. Okay. And that's methane. Now, we have so many cows here in Wisconsin, we take them for granted, but and the methane they produce actually could be, I always thought if we could hook them up to tubes or something somehow, but which end would you actually hook up on a cow?
You would hook up, yes, this is a question a lot of people would get wrong, but not me, and not you. The front end, you would hook it up to the front end. They're not actually blowing it out the rear, like us.
No. So they're burping or belching methane.
But they have a special adaptation where they can kind of shift around the machinery in their neck, and they gently exhale. They just exhale it. They're not even burping. Because have you heard a cow burp?
No.
Well, all right,
I'm not that close to cows. Bunnies, I probably would hear that if they did.
Bunnies do other interesting things.
Yeah, they do. And my puggle is very fond of them as a result. There's nothing like a good bunny poop, according to Tina.
Yeah.
And you would agree with that, because I read in the book that that's actually still good stuff.
There's good eating there.
There's good eating there. That's what they say. Yeah.
The bunnies themselves will re-ingest it.
Right.
Okay.
And we'll come back to that. But, one of the things that aren't the cow's stomach is kind of a miracle of nature, isn't it? I mean, they have more than one. But
They have a... The main stage is the rumen, and that is the rumen. It's like a giant composter, and you can go to an agricultural school, and if you're lucky, there'll be one of those fistulated cows, which has the hole in the side. And
we got one here.
You got one?
Yeah, at UW. Yeah.
Have you ever stuck your arm in there?
No, it's just no.
Live a little.
That's an exit.
No, not in that end.
Oh, okay.
No, they cut a hole in the side right by the rumen, and then you can while they're eating, you can put your arm in there. And I did this and feel that.
Why would you do that?
Well, because I'm a curious gal.
Okay, and if you put your arm inside a cow while it's ruminating, what do you feel exactly?
It's a great big composter, so you feel a lot of heat. It's very hot in there. Mm-hmm. Plus, there's these powerful contractions, so it's kind of industrial feeling. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
The cow is utterly bored the entire time.
Can they actually digest the magnets?
The magnets?
Yeah, the cows eat anything, all this metal stuff, and then they put magnets in there to gather it all up, but then what happens to the magnets?
The first stomach is the one where the magnets are.
Okay.
And then I don't think they're not in the rumen. But they don't. Yeah. It's hard to digest a magnet.
Because you're a farm girl, aren't you? Didn't you grow up on a farm?
I grew up in New Hampshire, but we didn't have any cows.
Okay.
No.
Let's talk about the Fletcher thesis for a while. This is the guy who believed in mastication.
Yes, that's
right. He made mastication a household word.
Yes, hypermastication, vigorous, lengthy mastication, lots and lots of mastication.
Mastication.
Chewing.
Yeah, and he must have been just fun to be around, because he would chew, he chewed a leek like 700 and something times.
722 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, Horace Fletcher, he had this idea that he was a nutritional economist, that's what he called himself, and he believed that if you chewed the food incredibly thoroughly, you would extract more benefit from it, more calories and more protein and whatever else was in it. So you could then eat only half as much of it, thereby saving money. So he had this idea that the nation could save, you could basically cut the budget by having people, poor people, eat half as much at these soup kitchens and things like that. So he was a kind of an unusual welfare reform in person.
Yeah. Was he at Harvard? Is that where he was?
His papers wound up at Harvard. Oh. He himself didn't go there, but he left his papers to Harvard, and they dutifully have kept them, and they are there. And I went and spent an afternoon. And Horace Fletcher, it was maddening because he was such an efficiency buff that he had typed on both sides of the page and with no margin, so the papers were just crammed with this. And it not terribly interesting either, but... Mm-hmm. Anyway, but he had friends in high places, and the Fletcherizing was a pretty surprisingly big fad in the United States. Yeah. Franz Kafka was a Fletcherizer.
That's no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, that explains a lot of things. Then, the Brits, do they still don't care for Eskimo food? Is that true?
They've probably become a little more adventurous, but the Brits. In polar exploration, were done in partly by their refusal to eat the way the locals would eat and to partake in what the locals would eat, which was a lot of organ meats and unsavory, frightening bits and pieces of marine mammals. But those bits and pieces were the most nutritious, and so the locals do quite well up there, and the Brits would perish.
Yeah.
Up there and down there, we're talking both poles. Yeah. There were, but mostly in the north, where you have the people eating the various organ meats.
Yeah, and they did better in adapting in India. Apparently, they seemed to like the curries and so forth.
They did. They accepted the curries. I don't know why they couldn't accept the raw caribou kidney and things like that.
Yeah.
They seem to have trouble with that.
Which brings up the question of revulsive food, or food revulsions and stuff. We can't seem to agree on what is revulsive. Are there some universally revulsive things to eat?
It seems that there are not. I think if you take any edible, safe substance, you will find a culture somewhere that thinks it's just the best thing to order on the menu. Mm-hmm. We're talking fermented cow urine is a condiment in Sudan. That just came to mind. They're just a tremendous variety of parts of the beast that you or I wouldn't go near that other cultures are like, give me that. That's the best part.
Okay. But then the feeling of revulsion, taste revulsion, that is a human characteristic. But causes it is entirely cultural?
Yes, that's right. In the United States, we are particularly squeamish about organ meats. We export I have the figure in the book. It's a crazy amount of brains and organ meats and lips and tails. We really are we eat a very small sliver of the animal, and other countries import those from us. And it's just you grow up, but when you're a little kid, you come into the world, you don't have any sense of what is disgusting. And this was proved by this psychologist who studied disgust. His name was Paul Rozin, and he did this experiment where he presented kids, 16 to 29 months, I think they were, and he put in front of them a variety of disgusting foods, including artificial dog dew crafted from peanut butter with Limburger cheese for the odor. And he presented that as dog dew. And 55% of the kids ate the dog dew. 38%, I think, ate the sterilized grasshopper. They had no sense of this is not good to eat. I won't go near it. But as they get older, around a few years old, they start to eat the way their parents eat. They eat the way the people on TV eat. Mm-hmm. So
if your parents eat dog dew, you will too, basically.
That's right. You can continue eating dog dew throughout your adult life.
Pig testicles at Ball State. You want to deal with that? Your line here.
Yeah. I was trying to get at. I was trying to figure out: are there any culture? Is there any food that no one will go near? And what about the genitalia? Who eats that? And I came upon this woman, Deanna Petrocelli, I believe, Puricelli or something. Anyway, I was. She said, "Yes, indeed, we are working on a project to introduce the public to pork testicles." Mm-hmm. And she turned out to work at Ball State University, which I like very much.
You gotta like me. How far has this gotten? Still in the planning stages, or?
I need to check back in with her and see what's up.
That's so they'd use the final. Now, doesn't that go into? That must go into something. That must be used by someone somewhere. One would think.
Well, yeah.
Because others are, you know, hard types.
Yeah, you have your novelty festivals with testicles. out in Wyoming.
Testicle festivals?
Festivals.
Yeah, I guess there are, because you know, mountain oysters and all that.
Rocky Mountain oysters. That's right.
They're very people like those. Well, we had them on stage when we were in Oklahoma or someplace, and we had a jar of them. And I said, anyone want to come up and join me? All women came up. Three or four women. No guy would come up and eat them. So, you know, make of that what you will. That was kind of strange. Cat crack.
Yeah, cat crack.
Yeah.
Pyrophosphates.
Now, this is interesting because it has to deal with science, but sort of marketing, I guess.
Well, the people who make pet food have kind of an interesting challenge. They have to create something that is appealing both to the dog or cat and also to the owner of the dog or cat, who's the one who's opening the can or the bag. Mm-hmm. And if it smells like a dog will go crazy over the smell of, say, putrescine, cadaverine. These are compounds of decomposing protein that dogs are like, give me that. But the owner,
that was good. Yeah.
Was that good?
Yeah.
The owner doesn't want anything to do with it, so they have to find something
in between
that smells good to both parties. Taste isn't so important.
And for cats, what is this compound exactly?
Okay, yeah. So pyrophosphate is this compound that it's been referred to as cat crack. It's a taste that cats love, and we can't taste it. I tried there was a little bottle of it at the company that I was at, and I asked to try it, and it doesn't taste like anything. It's water with a little strangeness to it, but cats love it. So there's all kinds of interesting differences between people and
where does
cats.
It come? Where does it come from, and what does it simulate for a cat?
Nobody knows Nobody knows why they like it or what it tastes like for them.
Yeah.
They just know they love it.
They can't resist it. Huh?
They can't resist it.
Yeah.
You
know
you
what
put
I found?
That on anything, and a cat will eat it.
You know what I sort of found? I mean, most of this research is very interesting, and the people are totally into it and stuff, but it was kind of, the spit researchers were kind of sad, I thought, because no one respects their discipline.
It's true.
Yeah.
Spit gets no respect.
No.
It deserves a lot of respect.
Are there a lot of people in spit?
I only found one.
Uh-huh.
I found one dead one from years ago.
Oh.
Irwin Mandel had devoted his life to spit.
The father of spit.
The father of spit.
Yeah.
Yeah. and I found a beautiful Italian woman, Erica Saletti,
mm-hmm.
who is an expert in saliva, and it's tough for her. She went to a conference once with a bunch of dental people, and she said she came back to her room and called her boyfriend in tears, saying, "They think of it as moistening, and that's all."
Yeah. Yeah.
It does so much more for you.
It does.
It does.
What is her research aimed at as far as spit goes?
They're trying to understand...
Spit.
Spit. Yes. Well, also, I think, you know, when if something goes wrong with your spit machinery, because if you don't have, if you can't make your own saliva, you're in a world of trouble, because when you eat or drink anything acidic, it will, without saliva to dilute the acid, and which it does very effectively. If you take a sip of red wine and you're paying attention, you'll feel this gush of saliva coming in like the cavalry. It's to dilute the acid and protect your tooth enamel. So it's pretty. When you don't have saliva, your teeth start to fall apart. So they need to know how to recreate, you know, create artificial saliva. And part of it is just understanding the body. Always
okay.
A good thing.
So nothing, in other words.
That's why there's not only much
you,
one
you
of
can't
them.
Really advance the science because it's, you know, it's not really a complex substance. Spit, is it chemically? What is it?
Yes, it is. It's got it's got antibacterial stuff. It's got antiviral. Oh. It's got histatins, which help close wounds. If you keep a mouse from licking its wounds, they won't heal as quickly. Oh. And wounds in your mouth heal faster than wounds on your skin. There's all kinds of amazing stuff in saliva.
Well, is
you
that...
must respect saliva, Michael.
I'm sorry. Now I have more respect for it, even as we speak. It's no longer spittle to me, I'll tell you that. But is this at all related to the thing that I was talking about, babies pacifiers, if the parents suck on it? Is that the saliva transfer that somehow gives them added autoimmunity or something like that?
I haven't heard that, but it makes sense because that this is the new thing now, all kinds of bodily fluid transplants.
Yes.
Yes.
Like Elton John and that sort of thing.
Did Elton have a fluid transplant?
No, I don't know. No, Elton John is the one who, I'm thinking of Prince Charles.
I don't know where you're going with that.
I don't either, but I don't know. Elton John was the one who would eat food and spit it out, right?
Oh,
that's
yes.
how he lost it.
Well, he didn't. He was he somebody put in one of the tabloids that he was doing. It's an eating disorder called chew and spit.
Chew and spit.
Yeah, where you don't swallow, you chew it and you spit it out.
Right.
Kind of a catch and release scenario.
But he doesn't, or he didn't.
No,
or
he doesn't.
Didn't.
He won the lawsuit.
Okay.
Yeah, he doesn't do it, but they said he did.
Prince Charles, I guess, was the colonic irrigation guy, dude.
Did Prince Charles is a fan of the enema?
That's what I heard, yes.
Oh, is that right? You didn't hear that from me, though.
No. Did you hear any of that? It's true of royalty in general, isn't it? They tend towards that.
They tend toward that. There was one of the Georges, I think. I don't know. George the Second. I don't know.
Maybe
which,
the third.
Probably the third. Yeah, probably the third. He was one of the. He was a big whoever he was, whichever number. He loved them so much. He gave them to his dogs. His dogs would get enemas too.
Ooh. Well, that's a dead end conversation, isn't it?
That's
the problem with this book. A lot of it is stuff that you can't really talk about in polite conversation. Yet it's fascinating.
And yet here we are.
And here we can read it to ourselves and go, oh boy, how about that there. The straining at stool theory, okay. Elvis's demise is in here, and it's maybe not something we can just glance over right at the moment now, but that was pretty shocking as well.
That was shocking and sad. I was going to say it's a moving story.
Or not. Yeah. Well, it's in there though. You have to buy
it's
the
in
book.
There.
Buy the
it's
book.
In there.
That'll be the payoff. Buy the book and realize, and you can find out what actually happened to Elvis in there. And we'd be amiss or remiss, I think, if we didn't mention the miracle peristalsis in all this, because it's really behind everything, isn't it?
It is. Peristalsis is it's kind of like a stadium wave of contractions.
It is exactly.
It starts and it keeps going, and that's how you swallow, and it also moves stuff along through the intestines. And if you can't do that, some people are born without nerves along a stretch of the colon, so the muscles can't be activated, and they're in a whole world of trouble too. That's sort of the one of the theories with Elvis is that the reason he was so constipated. There, I gave it away.
Okay.
Was that he might have had it's called Hirschsprung's, where you have a stretch of colon where the muscle movements can't happen, and so everything gets backed up.
Okay, stop her.
Stop
already. And just one more thing. Can an alligator fight its way out of a python?
It cannot. But there are photographs that make it appear as though it can. But no, once you're... what is amazing to me is that a python can take down an adult alligator. Mm-hmm. Those suckers can really pull in the large game. So, but once you're in there, in a python...
You're done.
You can't move, so there's no way you could kick your way out. But the photographs that people have seen on the internet, it was a complicated story of a pre-existing weak spot in the python.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, too, a man swallowed by a whale or a tiger shark? Is he done?
Well,
because they swallow them whole, right? There's no chewing.
Like a sperm. Okay, the best whale, if you're going to be swallowed by a whale, the best one is a sperm whale because they feed by suction. They don't chew their food. They just pull it in. And the opening is big enough that a man could fit through into the stomach compartment.
Yes.
Comfortably. And let's say he's got an oxygen tank because he's been scuba diving. So he's got some oxygen, okay, and there's no gastric acid in this particular stomach, so that's good.
Yeah, and he has a smartphone or something for entertainment.
And he's got a smartphone. Uh-huh, yeah, and he's downloaded some things to watch. So he's all right. The only problem is that whales tend to chew their food with their stomach. They have a lot of powerful stomach contractions, so it wouldn't be very comfortable.
But conceivably, he could get... Has it been documented now where a man has survived that situation?
Yeah, no, there was a story that made the rounds about a guy named James Bartley, and supposedly he was found inside a sperm whale. But that's been debunked, sadly.
That's been poo-pooed,
yeah.
Okay. Well, that's disappointing, actually. Any of these outrageous things that actually happen, you know, swallowed by things and things crawling out of things or having snakes in your stomach?
All
undocumented?
There was the most persistent myth these days is that the mealworm will eat its way out of the stomach of your pet reptile or frog or whatever it is. And I witnessed with a urethral endoscope, which is a very skinny tube that with a light and a camera. I was in a lab where they put that down into the stomach of a lizard and a frog that had just eaten a live mealworm, and there was no truth to it. The mealworm does not eat its way out of the stomach. But that was the best contender for somebody who could live in there and make their way out.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
I guess that's a spoiler. Spoiler alert.
If
you're going to read Gulp. But Elvis is still in there, and really it's worth getting just for that. Thank you, Mary Roach, as always. Look forward to the next one. By the way, are you going to Mars? And I noticed you packed for Mars. Are you going to go in this one way to Mars?
Are you kidding me? No. No. I go to the moon, but not to Mars, no.
Especially you got to stay. That's a little weird, isn't it?
You got to stay, I know, yeah. Well, some people, just think of it as immigration.
Yeah.
We'll put
it in the bill.
Extreme immigration.
We'll put it in the bill. Thank you, Mary Roach. Mary Roach, ladies and gentlemen. Gulp is the latest one. Read it. Get it and read it. Adventures on the Alimentary Canal. Yeah, there's a lot more in there, too. Don't think that's everything. There's even more in the book itself.
You ate those testicles.
What is this now? Yeah, I try.
Those Rocky Mountain.
They weren't. They weren't.
They weren't horrible.
I wouldn't snack on them. But you know, to do it
for show, to do it just.
They
to
weren't
say you
did. As gross as that. You know that clam they got out
like
there.
Like gooey duck.
Yeah. That was revulsive,
yeah.
I thought.
It looks very jello-like.
But that's because they brought in a live one there, and it was... Oof. You see one of those? You're from up there. Yeah. Whew. But we'll eat anything, really, depending upon how we feel about it.
I guess so. I'm not real too hungry right now after that.
No, not me either. Hey, but this will work up an appetite. What you got here?
This is a tune I wrote called Take Back the Laid Back.
All right.
Thank you.
You're listening to Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI Public Radio International. Once again, it's Michael Feldman.
All right. What? Give me that microphone there. Anything else you want to say while you got it? Say hello to anybody? No? Okay. Got your Mother's Day thing all lined up?
Yes, yep.
Hi, Mom and Grandma and Grandpa.
And Julie and the kids. Does his wife last? Well, we're going to play a round of the What Do You Know quiz is what I'm thinking, because that's something... Anyone come here for that particular purpose? Oh, no kidding. Really, that's very exciting. First, we've got to have someone read the four disclaimers. I forgot to hand it out here. Anyone can do this kind of cold, you know, just a reading thing. Yeah, you're good at this, right? You just stand up here and deliver that. You don't need reading glasses because you're a young person.
I'm young. Yes. All questions used on What Do You Know have been painstakingly researched, although the answers have not. Ambiguous, misleading, or poorly worded questions are par for the course. Listeners who are sticklers for the truth should get their own shows. The cicadas have been saving that up for 17 years. Okay. Persons employed by the International House of Radio or its member stations are lucky to be working at all, let alone trying or tying up the office phones trying to play the quiz. Listeners who have won recently should sit on their hands and let someone else have a chance for a change. All opinions expressed on What Do You Know are well-reasoned and insightful. Needless to say, they are not those of the International House of Radio, its member stations, or lackeys. Anyone who says otherwise is itching for a fight.
All right, are you professional? That was good. Oh, take that and practice it at home. But you did a great job. All right, here you go. Now, here's a chance for you to show an interest in the What Do You Know quiz, chance to, for all that education you've had, to pay off, finally. By playing the What Do You Know quiz, let's see, put up a hand or a digit or anything you got there that's handy. Indicate an interest, because you think that you are... Yes? Okay, fine. Since you're the only one raising any hands at all, why don't you come down here to the aisle? Let's talk this over. Let's see if you qualify. So far, no one has not. There's that. It's in your favor. How are you?
Hello.
Hello. You are?
Sarah Whipple.
And Sarah, you're from?
Bend, Oregon.
Bend, Oregon. Beautiful Bend. Where the Pinot bubbles up from the ground. Sarah?
Yes.
And what do you do out there, Sarah?
I have a nursery landscape business, Bend Pine Nursery.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Yeah. What you got out there?
Lots of conifers.
Conifers?
Mainly trees and shrubs.
What kind of conifers you got?
We have pine, spruce.
You name it, huh?
Yeah, quite a few different varieties.
Okay, Sarah, you got to give me one good reason you should play this quiz.
I volunteered.
Okay, let's hear it for the spirit of volunteerism in America, still going strong. Oh, you can come with me. That's the only thing. That's the only problem. Did I mention that? You got to come here to do this. Please join me here. I'm the Naugahyde. Have a seat there if you would. Get some fresh water for you right there if you need it. And we can send out for a snack if you want something.
I'm fine, thank you.
You want solids? I'm just taking water. Okay, all right. So business is good?
Yeah, it's gotten a lot better.
Conifers are selling?
Yes.
Who comes in for a conifer these days?
We do mostly, you know, residential landscaping, so homeowners, but we do a few commercial jobs as well.
Yeah. Californians come in trying to buy up your trees?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. Do you sell to them or not?
Sometimes.
Are you from California originally yourself?
No, I grew up here in Madison.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I'm here visiting my parents.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah.
And then how'd you get out to Bend?
Via Seattle and Santa Fe, New Mexico. It kind of was a good combination of the two environments.
So. You hit all the spots everyone wants to go to. If you're from Madison, you know, really, that's like the Madison Trail of Tears.
Yeah.
Cool. But you left out Berkeley. You didn't go to Berkeley at all?
Didn't go to Berkeley. No, okay. I went to the University of Washington, and I went to graduate school in New Mexico.
Oh, cool. Yeah, New Mexico, all the good places. And so business is good, life is good. What do you do for recreational purposes?
I like to hike or bike or, you know, do my own gardening when I get a chance.
You still want a garden after running that?
I do. I still enjoy landscaping my property, and yeah.
Excellent. Most excellent. So now you know how this works, Sarah? Someone plays along with you?
Yes, I listen to your show when I'm, you know, working.
You know, mostly it doesn't work, but occasionally it does.
Occasionally.
So you get a partner on the line here and work together, and we have various categories and so forth. But how does someone get on the quiz in the first place, Sarah?
They pick up the phone and dial 1-800-942-5669 and answer this qualifying question.
Okay, we want to know what temperature a cicada likes. Now, a cicada is down there. It's got to be down there 17 years. And we have to know, it's pretty much on the money, I think, because there's this one temperature. When the ground hits this temperature, they're out. If it doesn't, they're in for another 17 years. I don't know how long, you know, 20 years, 25 years, unless you get this ground temperature within
5 degrees. Is that
okay.
too generous?
We'll give it within 5 degrees. That's fair enough. Let's go to the phones right now. Dahomey, is that right? Dahomey?
Yeah, it's Dahomey.
Dahomey. Oh, it's Dahomey.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You know what the Dahomey's short for?
No, I'm afraid to ask. What is it short for?
Duh.
Okay. you're in Madison, Mississippi.
Yeah, I hear you know a good friend of mine.
Who's that?
Fred from Vicksburg.
You're Fred, aren't you?
Yeah. Hey, go Pack.
Yeah, Fred. It's Fred again under an assumed name and even a dumber one in the last six or seven.
I'm just a Packer today.
Okay. How are you doing, Fred?
Hey, pretty good. I'm waiting for football to start. Go Pack.
Yeah. Excited about some of the draft selections, are you?
Yeah, where are you broadcasting from today? Madison?
Oh, yeah, Madison. Yeah.
All right. Well, I hope the weather's up there. Hey, there's a couple of people I'd like to say hi. I mean,
yeah, Fred, we got to do a show here, Fred. Come on, man. I'll let you on here, but you got to tell me this. What temperature does a cicada, what temperature is a cicada waiting for to get out of the ground, ground temperature?
Okay, I'm saying 45 degrees.
Oh, you're way off, Fred. Too bad. Okay. Mike's on the line now from Westerville, Ohio. Oh, he's still on there.
Yes, I am.
Oh, God, get out of there. Fred. Okay. God, I can't kill him. Like scotching a snake, as they used to say. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, hiya, Mike. Sorry about that little problem with the phone lines.
No trouble.
How are you this morning?
I'm wonderful. I'm in my garage squeegeeing the floor.
Why would you do that, Mike?
Because the garage needs to be cleaned.
But who squeegees their floor? I mean, this is you need intervention on this.
Well, it's either that or listen to my wife complain about the pin oak helicopters that fall in the come into the house.
She complains about the what that falls into the where?
Oh, what's the tree that drops a little seeds that look like helicopters
maples.
When they fall?
Yeah.
The maple.
Maples around here.
Maple tree, sorry.
Yeah. And they fall into the what?
Well, they fall into the yard on the driveway, and then they get tracked into the house, into the garage, and it's just a mess.
Why would she complain to you about that? You're not an oak tree, maple tree.
No, but I take care of that garage.
You know, we should talk at length about some of these issues. But so you're squeegeeing now. What kind of floor do you have in that you would squeegee it?
Nice. Well, it's concrete, and I have it coated with garage paint, floor paint.
Oh, you're a very thorough guy. Okay. Anyhow, Mike, What yes, temperature sir. Is are the cicadas waiting for? Some of them have already found it. Ground temperature within 5 degrees.
I would say 55 degrees.
Say what, 65?
Yes, sir.
That's right, 64 degrees. Holy cow, Mike. Anything to get you away from squeegeeing the garage door. I don't care. All right, very good. What field are you in, Mike, when you're not squeegeeing?
Food service sales.
Food service sales? For a well-known company we would all know?
Probably not.
Okay. What is it then?
The company's called Sun Meadow.
Yeah, what do you,
out
what,
of Florida.
What do you handle?
It's primarily frozen meals for seniors and developmental disabled folks. We do home-delivered meals.
Well, that's terrific. That's great. Mike, this is Sarah.
Hello.
Hello, Sarah.
Mike. She's got a nursery out there in Bend, Oregon.
Oregon.
Okay, the two of you are a team right now, so now that you've got to know each other, that's perfect. You work together, and here are the various categories.
They are current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school, had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay, Mike, you pick the first one. What would you like?
Current events.
Current events, right out of the news. Who is the most trusted American in America? The most trusted American. The list just came out. Number one. The most trusted. Is in the news everywhere?
Currently?
Currently.
Bill Clinton?
No. I want to say Michelle Obama, but I don't think that's right. I think she's on the list.
All right, you both don't
what
have
do you
no
think,
idea.
Sarah?
You have no idea, do you?
I think Michelle Obama's a good guess, but I really don't know.
No, I'm sorry. You guys have no idea. It's Tom Hanks.
Obviously.
It's an actor. Number one.
Yes.
Yeah. Forrest Gump is the most trusted in America. All right, well, don't worry about it. I guess either you saw that or you didn't.
What do people trust him about?
I have no idea. He just looks trustworthy. Number two, Sandra Bullock. Number three, Denzel Washington. Number four, Meryl Streep. Number five, Maya Angelou. So four actors, trusted people in America. This is America.
Well,
what can you say? I'm sorry. You know, that'd be...
Zero right and one wrong.
Okay, you'll come back from this. What's left there, Sarah?
People, places, things you should have learned in school, science, or odds and ends.
I'll try things you should have learned in school.
Okay, school. This one you got. Ratchet. Is that good or bad? Your kid says something was ratchet.
Ratchet? Ratchet? Are you talking like ratchet, like a ratchet wrench?
Ratchet, yeah. It's like
or,
that.
Or
but it's
rat
not.
Shit.
No. Oh, God. Dude, that should be saved.
Uh-oh.
That should be saved. That should not be expunged. That was so good. No, ratchet. Say something that was really ratchet.
What do you think, Sarah?
I think good.
You think good?
Yep. You think good, Mike?
I don't know. It's awful close to wretched.
Yeah, but not for these kids.
All right, well, I'll agree.
They don't know ratchet. I think it's good. Anyone can verify that for me? Ratchet? Not good? It's bad? Ratchet is bad? You sure?
Just getting screwed down.
All right, anyone else? Ratchet, bad? Oh, God, I'm sorry, it's bad.
Things can get ratcheted up.
All right, bad. I thought it was good. My daughter said something was ratchet, but she seemed to like it. Okay, so that would be...
They haven't given their answer yet, I don't think.
They said... didn't you?
I said good, but I guess we're wrong.
Oh.
But we can change.
Oh, did you say bad? Oh, I'm sorry.
Sure.
Okay, so then it's right. Congratulations. It is bad. You're right. I'm so sorry. I made an assumption there, and
that's,
I should never
That's one right and one wrong.
Oh, okay. What's left then, Sarah?
People, places, science, or odds and ends?
Mike?
Places.
Places it is. The best country for moms. Mother's Day coming up. The best country for moms. Is it Slovenia, the U.S. of A., or Finland? Best country for
Finland.
Moms.
Finland.
What'd you say?
No, I don't. Finland. I don't think I need to think about that one. I'm pretty sure it's Finland.
Where do you think it is, Mike?
Finland.
I'll trust Mike. He seems to have some strong intuition about this. So
About
Finland and mothers. So.
Okay. Finland, you said?
Yes, sir.
Finland, you're right. Oh, yeah, number one, Finland, Sweden, Norway. Take your choice. I don't get it. Of the top 25, the U.S. is 30 for moms. I don't know how
Not
they figured that.
Not a surprise.
That. Yeah, I figured that. That would be...
Two right and one wrong.
Okay, they're getting close here.
Yep, and they have people, science, or odds and ends left.
Okay, Sarah?
I'll try science.
Science it is. Let's see what we got here. It is now believed that our Ice Age ancestors, that's like 15,000 years ago, had a working vocabulary of thousands, hundreds, or five words.
I'll say hundreds.
Mike, you want to weigh in on this?
Yeah, I do. What were the choices again?
Thousands, hundreds, or five words.
Thousands, hundreds, or five.
That we can verify.
That we can verify.
Through continued usage.
I don't know. Five sounds awfully low
words,
because if you...
Types of words.
Yes.
And languages.
What was that again?
Follow these.
Five sounds awful low because...
Thousands,
mean,
hundreds,
about,
or five.
I'll trust you, Sarah, if you say it's five.
No, I said hundreds.
Oh, hundreds? Yes, yes, I agree.
Why don't you say five? See if you
trust. But you know, maybe if they can, maybe they can only verify five though. So maybe we should go with five.
Interesting, five words. My puggle knows six.
Because it's all about the verifying.
Verifying. Well, I'd have to say hundreds still because you'd have to think about all the cave painting they did.
Okay. Do you want to win, Mike? I mean, winning is not everything.
Fine.
Five, you think five?
We'll do five then.
Five.
We'll do
five. Yes, five. Five words. You don't need any more. Yes, no, maybe. And two others.
Sarah, indulge in full-flavored experience from handcrafted artisanal cheeses and their pasture-perfect companions from Fromagination on Madison's Capitol Square. Mike, get your Java fix early in the day with Steep and Brew's breakfast blend and relax in the afternoon with the smooth richness of Costa Rican Terrazu from Madison's Steep and Brew coffee. There are some other prizes, too, but we don't have time to read them. I will just say Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced by Wisconsin Public Radio for PRI Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. This is PRI Public Radio International. Live from the Monona Terrace Community and Convention Center, it's Michael Feldman's What Do You Know from Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI Public Radio International. That's John Tulin on piano, Jeff Hammond on bass, I'm Sarah Nix. In this hour of What Do You Know, thanks for the memos, a special Mother's Day hotline, and more of the What Do You Know quiz. Support for What Do You Know comes from PRI affiliate stations and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And now the man who wonders if chewing on an unlit cigar would work as well as sucking on a pacifier, it's Michael Feldman.
I think that would only work if your baby were chewing on the cigar first.
That sounds
passed
right.
Passed it to you, which is unlikely. Well, you know, each week at this time, read actual memos sent in by actual listeners and other things as well, including this here. It's kind of cute. This is sent in by Alice Ayers. And where is she? Freeport. Freeport somewhere. Let's see. Oh, yeah, here it is. Oh, Greenport, New York. And she says, we live in a retirement community which continually discusses the proper dress in our dining areas, both for guests and residents. Here's the latest. Okay, so this is called, I guess they post this. I'll say yes to the dress code. So here is an example here. They have pictures shown with a big X and a big check mark. First one, I mean, these are older people. They're not going to be wearing those oversized shorts and all that. You know, that's unlikely, I think. Kids can get away with that. But they should dress like a young man, a young 24-year-old man, apparently. He looks very neat. It says, anyhow, say yes to the dress code. Summer is coming, and so are family and guests who are always welcome at Peconic Landing. When they visit, or please remind your guests, they are enjoying the amenities of a community shared by many others. Residents consistently ask us to enforce a dress code in the main dining rooms. Such enforcement can be difficult because dress is a matter of personal taste, and these days a more relaxed style is generally accepted. While casual dress is suited for the cafe diners in our well-appointed dining rooms, you're expected to dress in a way that reflects the ambience of this more polished setting. Okay, that's what I wanted to retire into, an ambience. That's not for me. Of a polished setting, a polished ambience, even worse. What is appropriate? Dress can be subjective, but clearly what works on the beach or for hanging out on the weekend does not work in a formal dining room. Ripped or faded jeans, tank tops, halters, midriff blouses, short shorts, flip-flops, T-shirts, swimwear, baseball and other types of caps, semi-sheer clothing or clothes that show too much skin do not belong in a formal dining room. Please ensure your family and friends abide by the dress code, and if they choose to dine in the remaining dining rooms this vacation season. Thank you so much, Resident Services. So that's, there you go. That's kind of cute, but that's not the memo. That's just a cute thing. Here's the actual memo. My chiropractor works out of her home. On her front door, I found scotch tape the following message. It reads as follows. I will be on vacation the second week of April. Please plan all accidents, traumas, and mishaps appropriately. Do not take bull riding, kickboxing, or lift large objects such as grand pianos. This is not a complete list of all possible activities to avoid. If you think, should I be doing this, the answer is likely no. I will be out of town, and the ER is your only other option. So think twice before doing anything foolish the week preceding my vacation and the week of my vacation. I am going on vacation no matter what you might do to yourself. And I will not be available until after I return. You may resume all questionable activities upon my return. Thank you so much for that door memo. Just what you want to hear from your chiropractor or your psychotherapist. Those are the two you want to get that from. And where can they send these communications?
They can send those memos to whatdoyouknow@wpr.org, subject line memos, or if they go to notmuch.com, they can find a way to post it there.
Yes, they can. Well, Mother's Day is coming up, isn't it? How many of you are mothers? I started to do it. And how many of you are not mothers? Of those of you who are not mothers, are you thinking of becoming mothers? Let's hear that from those. Good luck with that. Let me know how that works out for you. My mother has passed away some years ago now, but she's with me. You know, the thing about getting older is that you suddenly have your mother again and your father. One side of my brain is my mother, and I hear my mother talking to me. It's either that or my dog. You know? They're like Son of Sam or something, but it's my mother telling me to do things. And I always thought, you know, my wife said as we were raising the girl, she said, it's like they have two mothers, which is kind of an insult, I took it as a compliment because I was raising the way my mother raised me. You know, that's what I do with the kids. I cook for them that way, making the dishes and stuff. And so I thought, I haven't read this in a long time. This is old, but it's about my mother a little bit, and it's called The Folks Saws. My mother, the things my mother used to say, which indicators of personality and sort of indicates the sort of mother that I am. So... you know what they say, folk wisdom is only as good as your folks. Any philosophical rough edges I may have are probably due to the fact that the folk saws in our family had a lot of broken teeth. Even the buzzwords could have stood sharpening. When I find myself in times of trouble, what comfort I can draw from my father's sentiments on perseverance, it took us a long time, putz, we got there just the same. Maxims like that are why we never got a family crest. But the font of wisdom in our genetic pool really flows from mother. She is a philosopher savant. Mother improves standard epigrams by getting them wrong and somehow still right. The emperor's nude clothes, for example. Or infinitely more interesting insight into log rolling, one back scratches the other. That reminds me of her admonition, do unto others. That was it. Do unto others. And the always appropriate, you can lead a horse to water, but you don't want to drink it. The horse sense doesn't end there either. Countless times mother has inveighed, or oyveighed, really, against washing horses in midstream. If you do and you drink it then, you're only doing it to spite your mother. On the other hand, God bless the child that gets up and gets his own. Mom has her own school of thought that the general public could do a lot worse than to attend. Just like out of a can, see following recipe, for example, is her highest award for cooking, meaning it tastes good enough to have been mass-produced. We were raised as Campbell's soup kids, right down to the roses on our chubby little cheeks. Two, she knows people. There's good and bad in every group, she likes to note. And if you can't reason with some people, you can always season, which is why she carries a grain of salt at all times. Speaking of which, there are four don'ts. Don't be afraid to ring the meat buzzer. They keep the good chickens in back. Don't start with the neighbors, or a Shonda Hopham at the neighbors. Don't tip your head. She might have meant hand. Or she might have meant what my brother Howard always did. And the Zen-like, don't ask. The last being almost enough to make you want to have kids just to not answer their questions. Why does the 58-year-old furrier run off with a girl half his age? Don't ask. Even don't ask often was saying too much. When any particularly sensitive subject was touched upon, such as why Frida's marriage ended sometime during the honeymoon, mother would jab her finger several times in rapid succession toward the ceiling and with alarm whisper the name of Marcy, the all-hearing woman upstairs, in an attempt to prevent her from becoming the all-knowing. For Mom, in her finite wisdom, knows that sometimes the best saying is saying nothing at all. So that's my mom. And it's still the case today. And I do have the recipe. When I went away to college, which happens to be here, I made sure that I had her spinach borscht recipe, which is just like out of a can. And I'll mail this to you if you want it, actually. It's not too complex. Basically spinach and borscht in a jar. And you leave it in the refrigerator for several years, and it ages nicely. Well, that brings the whole question of mothers up, and it's time once again, of course, for our Mother of All Mothers Day hotline. We're looking for nominees for the Mother of All Mothers. In the past, a lot of times, we've had simply, you know, women with the most grandchildren, if she could remember all the names, you know, if you can do like 24 grandkids' names. You deserve to be, of course, the Mother of All Mothers, and of course, you will receive today the Mother Load from us. Just for being the Mother of All Mothers. We'll take nominations or from the individuals themselves who claim to be this mother. So let's get those calls coming in right now for nominations for the Mother of All Mothers on Mother's Day. And what is that number that the mothers and their nominees, nominators, need to call?
They call 1-800-942-5669.
Okay. Easy way to remember that for mothers,
yeah,
for the older mothers?
Yeah, yes, 1-800-WA-NO or 1-800-WHACK-NOW.
Okay, that's what we call the Mother of All Mothers on the Mother of All Mothers Day hotline. So let's hear from those mothers and from the people wanting to nominate these mothers as saying this is the Mother of All Mothers. Of course, the original Mother of All Mothers would be Lucy, I guess, in Ethiopia.
That's right.
Yes, and to date she is the progenitor of all mothers. Yes.
I think your mother's expression was don't tip your head because Howard does tip his head. Your brother Howard always
What are you talking? Oh, you're back on that. Okay, okay. It's true.
Yeah.
Yes.
I just thought of that. Because Arthur was here last week. He doesn't tip his head, but Howard tips his head.
That's a good point. Arthur doesn't do much of anything.
No, that's not what I'm saying.
No. You're right. That's very
good. Jovial kind of way he tips his head.
Yes. That still doesn't explain one back scratches the other, you know. But we're looking for nominations now for mothers of all mothers on Mother's Day to win the mother load here on the show. We've got Angela calling in now, and let's see what Angela is, if she is the nominee or the nominator. Hey, Angela.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm good. And you're in Milwaukee. And are you nominating yourself, or do you have a mother in mind?
I'm nominating my godmother.
Your godmother. Okay. Tell us about her and.
She lives in Portage, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. Her name is Esther Stedemeyer.
Esther, okay.
And she has, I'm guessing, 17 godchildren.
17 godchildren?
Yes.
Okay. That could be the record for godchildren. Okay. Tell us more about her and why she deserves to be the mother of all mothers.
She is an excellent woman. She cares about everybody. She was married to a man named John for many, many years. Passed away, and they had all these godchildren together. And she bakes cookies for everybody all the time. Like if you go out to dinner with her, she gives you a bag of cookies, chocolate chip cookies, molasses cookies. At Christmas time, she makes a ton of different cookies and candies, and she always gives everybody a bag of cookies and candies. One of her specialties is homemade turtles.
Turtles? You mean the chocolate?
Have you had those?
Chocolate type turtles?
It's like little pieces, pecans are put down as the little legs, and then a dab of caramel, and then a chocolate spot on top.
Okay, we're going to call her Esther with the turtles.
Yes.
And the godkids. Okay. How many you said that she had godchildren?
I'm guessing 17.
17. Okay, that's good. Okay, that's number one, Esther in Portage with cookies and godmother of 17. Okay, we got that. All right. Thanks, Angela.
Okay.
She's been nominated.
All right, thank you, Michael.
Let's go on here to Bob. Oh, nice to talk to you. Bob's in Kansas City. Bob, who have you got for us?
Hey, you know, I got to tell you about a lady, my mom,
yeah,
who taught me what trust was.
Taught you that what trust was?
She taught me what trust was.
Trust, yeah.
And she let me go off to this party. Mm-hmm. When I was in the eighth grade, mm-hmm, right? It was a couple blocks away, make a right, make a left. And she told me, you've got to be home by midnight.
Mm-hmm.
And I turn around and I go to this party, and I'm having a grand old time. It's about 11:30. And I'm thinking, well, I better get going. No, I'll just stay for a little longer. And that went on a few times. Finally, it's about 5 to 12. Well, I go tearing. I'm running like crazy. And I make the right, and I'm still running that other block. And then I make the left. And my mom's looking down the hill from the stoop. I grew up in the Bronx, right? So she's looking down at the block from the stoop, and she sees me come tearing around that corner, and she just started laughing like crazy. And she told me, I will never put another curfew on you. And she never did. She showed me that she trusted me.
Isn't that nice?
You know, yeah, from then on.
And did you tear... That's terrific. Did you tear it up from then on? Did you just not even come home at all after that? Or did you make her trust? Did you verify her trust?
A little of this, a little of that, you know. Sometimes when she didn't expect me to come home, I'd come home.
That's a good one, Bob. All right, Bob in Kansas City, the meaning of trust from your mom.
Hey, thanks.
Okay, we got her down, nominated.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Joel's in Crocker, Missouri. Hey, Joel. Have you got a mom you'd like to tell us about, or?
Yeah. Actually, I do have a mom.
Yeah.
I was just calling in to say I heard you were asking about mother of all mothers. She mm-hmm. had 9 of us kids, and Lord knows how many grandchildren,
because mm-hmm.
We all procreate just like she does.
Well, can you get us a number? There must be a way of figuring out the number.
To be honest, I can't remember. It's like 17 or 19 so far, and doesn't seem like there's any sign of stopping.
Yeah, well, how many have you had of those?
2.5.
2.5, okay.
Yeah, so we're still working on it.
Okay, good.
But she's just been a great mother to all of us kids, had 7 of the 9 at home, and raised us up.
In Crocker?
Always took care of us. No, she raised us up by St. Louis.
In St. Louis, or near St. Louis.
Yeah, I had to move away to get out of the gene pool.
That's a good
one. Too many cousins.
That's good. And your mother's name is?
Rebecca Hunt.
Rebecca. Nice name, too. Okay, and did she instill certain virtues in you?
Well, I don't know if she instilled good ones or not. She always always tried to teach us to do the right thing, but somehow we always end up doing crazy stuff that she always warned us not to, but out of 9 kids, all of us have grown up and turned into fine, God-fearing adults, but happen to love each other despite having all our fights with kids. And when I think of the kind of mom that a woman should be, she's a great example.
That's Rebecca.
Yes, sir.
In St. Louis. Okay, thanks, Joe. We got her down here. That's Rebecca. 9 kids and an unknown number of grandchildren.
Yes, sir.
There.
Have a good day.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Okay, let's go now to Philip in Carbondale.
Hello, Michael.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. Yourself?
Oh, good, good. Carbondale, one of my favorite places. I've said it time and time again, but it's always fun going down to Carbondale. Nice people.
Yeah, last time you were down here, I was out of town. I was kicking myself the whole way back.
Really? Well, I was kicking myself when I was in town because you weren't there.
Well, I got to tell you about my mother. She, you know, throughout thick and thin and everything our family's been through, she's got the 4 of us, and we haven't been the easiest to raise, but she's always taught us to have a sense of humor and always make light of things. And a great way about this was I brought my first girlfriend home during the middle of a Cubs playoff game, which is a bad idea to begin with. And she said, my girlfriend was, at the time, was really quiet and really, really kind of shy and whatnot. And my mother, without missing a beat, just turns to her and goes, "So do you have any other hobbies besides sucking my son's face?"
Oh, that's That's a good one.
You know, throughout it just this is the way she is. Always. Well,
she wasn't doing that. She wasn't doing that during the playoff game, was she?
Yeah, it was commercial break though.
Commercial break. Okay, and did you end up staying with this young woman or?
No. This was back in high school.
Oh, okay, all right. But she said it in a humorous fashion, not in one that would make the girl feel at all self-conscious about her behavior.
Oh, no, not her, but myself. I was mortified.
Yeah. Still a Cubs, your mom was a Cubs fan, right? The whole family Cubs fans?
Yeah, she finally got fed up with it and became a Rangers fan.
Okay, that's a good thing to do, I guess. All right, so you're nominating your mom. What's your mom's name?
Deidre?
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, sounds great. Thanks very much, Philip.
Thank you, Michael.
In Carbondale, we got her down here. Okay, we're going to go right now to Walt, who's in Wheeling, West Virginia. Walt, you got a nomination for us.
Yes, I do. My mom.
Yes.
Lola.
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 Tell us about Lola.
Okay. Lola has 14 grandchildren and 7 great-grandchildren. She's 80 years old, and she can still beat me at Scrabble.
Still beat you at Scrabble.
Well, okay. I kind of let her.
Do you? Some people are just naturally good at that. Some people are naturally good at that. You know, there's a gene for Scrabble, don't you think?
Absolutely, and yeah. I got it from Lola.
You got it from Lola, so you're decent.
Yeah, and Lola got it from her mother.
Ah, passed on, okay.
Yeah,
tell us a little more about Lola.
Well,
Was she a strong taskmaster when you were growing up?
No, she was more of an enabler.
She enabled you?
Oh, very much.
Yeah. What did she enable you to do?
Way more than I should have done.
Can you give me a for instance? Or can't you?
We still do. I'm sorry?
Can you give me a for instance or can't you?
Well, she enabled me to go to college and
great.
Be a music major and do all kinds of things that I really shouldn't have done.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Good mom.
Yeah. Was she musical herself? Or?
Absolutely. Played the piano.
Oh.
I derived that from her as well.
Uh-huh. How many siblings do you have?
I have 2 siblings.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But one of my siblings has 11 children.
Oh, okay.
So
that worked out. That spared you the need, right?
Absolutely. In fact, it inspired me.
Yeah.
I only have 2.
Okay, and in describing your mom, what your mom's name is?
Lola.
Lola, that's right. I got that right here.
That's right.
In describing her, just describe her for me. A nutshell description of your mom.
Okay, she's very short. She has hair that looks exactly like mine, or I have hair that looks exactly like her now that I'm 54 years old.
Yeah. What would that be exactly, since we can't really see you?
Well, it's kind of short and silver and, you know, kind of rounded out. And
Okay.
Okay.
And sense of humor, great sense of humor, and tolerant of her children as well as instructive.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, more tolerance than she should, you know, be expected to have.
Sounds good. I have to say you're really close to the lead in this one here, Walt.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Don't you think so? I mean,
okay. Well,
sounds
I appreciate
pretty good.
That.
Yeah, okay. We're going to let you guys decide. You'll be the deciders as we go on here. But she's definitely nominated. Lola's up there. Thanks, Walt.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Paul's in Kent, Ohio. And Paul, what about your mother, Paul?
Well, my mom was from England. Her name is Hilda.
Yeah.
And it's a little hard to talk about.
Oh, sure.
She passed away. Uh-huh. So I apologize, but
she
passed away. She was the most wonderful person.
Yeah. Was it recent that she passed?
No. I'm sorry, I'm going to hang up.
Okay. All right. Bye. Thank you, Paul. Sorry. Okay. Know the feeling, though. Let's go to Ray here is on the line. Yeah. This is Ray, isn't it?
Yeah, Ray. This is Ray.
Oh, wait a minute. Am I Ray or are you Ray?
Oh, or not, like my mother, her name was Nettie.
Your name is what?
Nettie, N-E-T-T-I-E.
M-E-T-T-I-E?
N like never.
Oh, okay, N-E-T-T-I, Nettie, I'm sorry. Okay, yeah, go ahead, Ray. Yeah. Tell us about her.
She raised 10 of us. We were dirt sharecroppers in North Carolina.
No kidding.
Always had plenty to eat, but might not be what we wanted. Sometimes we'd jam and grits, jam your feet on and take them and grits your teeth, you know?
Yeah.
she went to school about 6 years, but if you wanted to know anything, you went and you asked Mother. She always did. She's a very smart woman.
Self-taught.
Not to have a formal education, she was very smart.
Mm-hmm.
She raised us to be God-fearing mm-hmm. people.
Mm-hmm.
All 10 of us finished school.
Mm-hmm.
She lived to see it all 10 of us finished school. And the biggest lesson she taught me, I guess I was about 13, I was a little bit on the mischievous side. I get these little whippings every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow these parents would always say, this hurts me worse than it does you, right? So I bought a switch to her that day, and she says, okay, this is the day, now you whip me.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, I couldn't do it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I was a different person after that.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Well, that's interesting, because you always hear the expression, this hurts me more than it hurts you, but you never really get the chance to demonstrate that.
That's right. But she did.
She did.
And it worked.
That's it, huh? Well, that's excellent. Has she been gone a long time now? Or?
Yeah, she's been gone about, 28 years, I guess, 25 or something like that.
Yeah. Is she still in your head, though, like my mother's in mine?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially about that. My baby brother's with me. We're the truck drivers. I'm on the side of the road. I'm not driving.
Mm-hmm.
We're in Wyoming, mm-hmm. and we travel to 48, and I'm soon to be 80 years old myself.
No kidding.
Yep.
No kidding. You sound like a much, much younger man, Ray. You know that. You sound like a kid.
Some days I feel younger.
Yeah, I get that. All right, thank you, Ray, very much, and thank you for telling us about Nettie.
Yeah,
she's on our list.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Bye. I think we have time maybe for just one more candidate here. Who's it going to be? Okay, I guess next up here is Susan calling in from Kansas City. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
That's great. Thank you. Tell us about your mom or about yourself, if you're the nominee.
No, I'm not the nominee.
Yeah.
my mom's the nominee. Her name's Dorothy.
Dorothy.
And the first thing you have to realize is that both of my parents were sterile.
Mm-hmm.
But they had 6 kids without adoption.
Mm-hmm.
So when my mother would get mad at us, she would look at us and say, you're all figments of my imagination, and I can make you go away anytime I want.
This is an unusual nomination because I don't quite understand it. That's interesting. So she made you happen through her imagination, and she could dispense with you the same way.
Yes.
Yes.
She was also a full-time at-home mom. But she is very, very bright. And she used to read every magazine cover to cover, books cover to cover. She'd like read Scientific American and American Heritage and National Geographic and Time and, you know, whatever mm-hmm. we could afford to subscribe to, she'd subscribe to it. And she'd read it cover to cover. She was so bright that through high school our teachers would accept her as documentation on our bibliography.
Is that right? That's very cool.
You could cite
your mother on your
in
your bibliography. That's great.
Yeah, and she was a stay-at-home mom because there were 6 of us and my dad was in the Air Force and he'd be TDY all the time, so she had no choice but to stay home.
Mm-hmm.
She does not suffer fools. My little brother got to be 6'6", and at age 14, 15, he thought he knew it all. And he started pushing my mom around, thinking he was big stuff. And so she reached down and got out one of the iron fry pans and said, "Okay, bud, you want to push me one more time?" And he never laid hands on her again. She loves us all unconditionally, but she has standards. Like when I moved in with a boyfriend, she would not come into the house. She'd sit in the car when my dad had come in to visit. So.
And that was the rule? Did that ever change? Did she ever lighten up on that?
By the time my little brother moved in with a girl, yeah.
Yeah.
I was a pathbreaker, so. You know how that goes.
Yeah. That's a good one.
But when my grandmother had difficulties, they moved my grandmother into the house with them and supported her and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And she's taught me everything I know about love. And the other thing is, in 1963, she read this article in Scientific American about how colored toilet paper, the dyes, were foaming up rivers. So even though she's a Republican, we stopped buying colored toilet paper and started doing hippie stuff. So, I mean, that's my mom. She's just somebody that cares about the earth, cares about people.
Yeah.
And is somebody that loves unconditionally but has standards. Mm-hmm. And I'm very blessed because I've got a 30-year-old and a 12-year-old, and the 12-year-old was born when I was 48 years old. Surprise! And she, even though she's 2,000 miles away, she's always been there for me, and I'm blessed to have her. So
yeah,
that's my mom.
You know, I don't know how you people are feeling, but is this possibly the mother of all mothers? I mean, whenever we got, I you know, Susan, I think we've found her. I really do. I think your mom, Dorothy, is the mother of all mothers because she's got it all. She's got the strength, and yet she's got the understanding and the tolerance, and she's got the colored toilet paper thing.
No, white toilet paper. We only use white toilet
I know, but
paper.
I mean, she's got that thing where she will not use it despite being Republican. I think that was
right.
that was the selling point on that. So your mom, Dorothy, right?
Yeah.
Mother of all mothers. Congratulations on her and on nominating her, and I think we're all pretty convinced that she's the one. And what do we got for what's the mother load for this?
The mother load for the mother of all mothers includes the pride of the Badger State in an assortment of traditional and specialty cheeses, all made without artificial growth hormones or genetically modified ingredients or colored toilet paper, from Cedar Grove Cheese, southwestern Wisconsin's cheesemaker since 1878. Oh. Also, Beyond Delicious, the Ghost Whisperer's cookbook, with more than 100 recipes from the dearly departed, including nutty dill chicken pie, boiled cake, and fig puffs with wine sauce by Marianne Winkowski and David Powers from Clarice Press. And, of course, from you, Michael, what do you know? Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know from Bristol Park Books.
And you know she's going to read that from cover to cover.
Oh, she will.
It can be cited on all the grandkids' papers.
Yes.
Thanks, Susan.
Thank you.
Hang on. Make sure we get a mailing address for this, okay?
Okay, great.
Thank you. Susan from Kansas City and her mom, Dorothy. Mother of all mothers for 2013. Okay. Well, thank you, everybody who called in. Really, it's great to hear your stories. Fantastic. There you go. Okay. Makes you want to be a mom, doesn't it?
No.
Beats being a dad. See, the dads, you know, I mean, dads are great, too. I mean, you got to have a dad, you know, at some point.
Well.
You know, it's just, there's no handbook for a dad. I found in trying to figure it out, you know, suddenly find out, I was told that I was going to be a father, you know, how that goes. And then, so then you got to figure out, okay, fine, that's good. Now what? You know, don't you find that, Jeff? I mean, when you first had your kid, you said, okay. Because they have probably thought about it, about having children, and then they tell you that they've thought about it, and then you got to think about it pretty quick.
Right.
So,
yes.
But it agrees with you, obviously. And, well, that's great. Thank you all for calling in. That was terrific. Some music is what I'm thinking.
I'm thinking that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one you wrote was great.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
You're doing
thanks.
Some nice writing.
Thanks. Thanks.
Are you doing a lot of writing these days? Or?
Yeah, it's try. You know, no. I can't think of anything to play, so it's like, well, I better create something.
That's the way to go.
I guess.
And this one as well?
No. This is a standard called "There Is No Greater Love."
There is no greater love.
Ladies and gentlemen, once again, it's Michael Feldman.
Hey, you know, Jeff, our bass player, said an interesting thing during the break that you probably didn't hear because you weren't here, but about quoting the melody of a song. Can you explain what that means to the layman?
Sure. All the songs you play have a melody, and in the solo I took at the as far as I can tell, yeah, they do. Yes. Otherwise, they wouldn't be a. Yeah. Otherwise, they wouldn't be a song. It'd just be a chord progression.
Okay.
So, anyways, we were talking about at the very end of the solo, I quoted the melody.
You quoted the melody.
Yeah, I played the melody, which.
Quoting.
Yep, by playing the melody. Another way to say that is I quoted the melody.
You did the melody.
Yes,
you
I did the. I quoted the melody, as I played it,
okay.
And I. You know, I feel to end a solo, that's a good thing. It kind of brings it back home just in case everyone's, in case everyone's kind of losing interest in the tune or it's hard to hear the song. I think that kind of brings it back home. You know what I mean? In my opinion.
So you saved it from losing interest. Is it you're saying John was losing their interest and you quoted the melody to bring them back?
I'm not sure that's quite what he's saying.
Oh, no, okay. No, you're saying. But then, did you plan to do that? Or I know you didn't mean that.
Wait, did you say John was losing interest? Well, on a bass solo, bass solos are notorious for, sometimes kind of going off the track. And sure, yeah. By the end, I think it's a good idea to kind of bring everyone back in case everyone kind of lost. You get it.
It's fascinating stuff. Okay. Anyhow, that's Jeff Hammond on the bass there. John Tulin on the piano. And quoting a melody. Did you ever hear of that? You know about that?
Pardon?
You ever hear that term, quoting a melody?
No, I haven't.
Play an instrument yourself?
The radio.
Oh, yeah. What kind do you play?
Sony.
Yeah. I used to have a Philco that was really good radio. It sounded really good because it was big and made out of wood.
Tubes and things inside.
Tubes and things in there, They had a difference. They had a good resonance, though, because it was the size of a small refrigerator.
A woofer and a tweeter?
I don't know. I never looked inside it. It's scary.
Oh, yeah, they're awesome.
Are those old radios?
Oh, yeah, and they're heavy, too.
Heavy.
Big magnet in there behind the speaker.
Yes.
Yeah.
And who are you, by the way?
I'm Jim.
Jim? What do you do these days, Jim?
I'm a stay-at-home husband.
Are you?
Yeah.
That's cool. So you don't go to other homes and act as a husband. You just stay with the one.
No, it sounds better than being unemployed.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
What is your field, though?
What is my field? Oh, publishing.
Publishing?
Yeah. People don't read anymore, so it's gotten tough.
No point in publishing that.
Well, it's not as great a need, for us. So
you'll find something, I'm sure. But you got to get out of the house a little bit. Okay. How are you? Pretty good? You good? Things good?
Oh, excellent.
Yes.
Wonderful.
May I ask who you are?
Shirley.
Shirley, where are you from? Shirley, I may ask, or Shirley is who you are?
Whatever you want. Madison.
Shirley Madison?
Shirley from Madison.
Shirley from Madison. Is this, who's this?
This is Larry.
And Larry from Madison?
Well, Green Bay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. We have something in common, Michael.
What is that?
Beside our age. thank you.
And Shirley, of course.
Yes. Your belt.
My belt, yes.
Yes, I have the same belt.
Are you wearing it now?
I'm not wearing a belt.
You're not wearing a belt now, so how can I confirm that?
You'll confirm it.
You'll confirm that?
Yes.
Oh, you know about his belt then, do you? Do you know this gentleman?
Never Pardon? Saw her before in my life.
What is this gentleman to you?
He's a...
Careful.
A very good friend.
A very good friend. Very good friend? Or
a very, very good friend.
Well, I'm glad for you both, is all I can say.
Thank you.
It's very nice to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you.
And you're wearing a tracksuit, though. Were you running today? Or?
Hardly. I have a tough enough time walking.
Well, you just wear a tracksuit ordinarily?
Well, I think it looks, you know, good.
It's a nice, it's an Adidas.
Absolutely. Yeah.
A piece of junk or something. It's a nice one.
Thank you, thank you. Would you like to buy it, maybe?
Well, what field are you in, then?
I'm in the field of retirement.
Are you from England originally, or am I just talking this way for no reason?
Well, I must admit, but it was 100 years ago, but I was born there in England, yes.
Just a little town?
A little town of London.
Town of London. Little London town.
London, England.
Yes, and you... Did you leave London as a boy then?
I was 17. Yes. That was about roughly 20 years ago.
And you left for no reason?
Actually, I followed my mother. It was appropriate, don't you think?
I think so. She's probably leading you by the hand. And then where did she take you?
She took me to Boston.
Really? By the hand? The whole,
whatever.
Ship involved? Do you remember the trip?
Yes, I do. Yes, there was a ship, actually. It was the Queen Mary.
Queen Mary?
Yeah.
So you grew up in Boston?
Well, yeah, I went to school there. Northeastern University. Give it a plug.
Very good school. And did you end up teaching yourself? Or?
No, no. I ended up in retail management.
Retail management.
Yeah, yeah.
And what retail did you manage?
H.C. Prangy Company.
Prangy?
Yeah. Okay. Everybody remember H.C. Prangy Company?
Prangy's was Prangy's. Boy, now that you mentioned, I really miss Prangy's.
Yeah, well, no comment.
Nice to have you both here, and you're a really nice couple. Can I call you a couple? You're a couple. You're a couple. I can say that. Do we have something for our couple of the week here? Yes.
Sure, we can send them home with some wine.
Yes.
And they can picnic in elegance.
Wine, okay? Wine is good? Yeah.
Yeah, bottles of Domaine de Sac and Prairie Fumé from the Wollersheim Winery.
All right, sounds good. And were you going to blow that horn? Is that
I was going to blow that horn, but now that I've got your attention, I'll just wave my hand.
Okay. Your hand keeps doing that for any reason, though.
That's true.
So we should play the quiz, is
yeah,
what I'm saying.
Yeah, we should.
Okay. We'll go to the What Do You Know quiz right now. This chance to win fabulous prizes. Come on. I didn't care for this part too much, but that was a rather stern raise of the right hand. A little bit scary. You didn't mean it that way, did you?
No. Okay.
How are you?
Just fine. Thank you.
And your name is?
Dan Madden.
Dan Madden?
Yes.
Dan Madden. I know that name. How do I know that name?
I don't know.
What do you do, Dan?
I just retired from the Madison Fire Department.
Oh, you did? This is the firefighters here? These are all the firefighters. Okay.
Fire station number 9.
Fire station number 9. Is that the one that's out here?
Midvale.
In Midvale. Okay. All right, Dan Madden, give me one reason you should play this quiz.
I like trivia.
Well, this is not trivia, Dan. This is my life. Come on down here anyhow. Come on, join me. Give Dan a little encouragement. Have a seat there if you would, Dan. So is there a gene for firefighting? It tends to run in families, doesn't it?
Yeah, my dad was a firefighter.
Yeah, he was. Anybody else in the family? Any siblings or
brother is a police chief.
Police chief? What went wrong with him?
Yeah, that's what we ask.
Something went wrong there. Something he must have had a reversal in life at some point.
Yeah, kind of disappointing.
Yeah. Do you get along with him? I mean, because he's
yeah.
a police type.
You have
and
to.
A fire type.
Right.
Is that true what they say about firemen and cops? I mean, is there kind of a disjunction between them? Not dislike, necessarily.
Well, the rivalry is more about us liking our job better than they like theirs.
Is that generally true? Firemen, or firefighters, excuse me. Like their jobs, and cops have mixed feelings?
Yeah. Well, I can only speak for us.
Yeah. You still got the pole there? They still got the pole at number 9?
No, it's a one-floor station.
Better that way.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of. Why do they always do that? Why do they do that? I read they're getting rid of poles in a lot of places that still have them.
Yeah, you can get hurt if you don't hold on.
Yeah. And if you don't use your arms, you just go down with your legs around it or something like that, because you're probably holding gear and stuff, right? So that could be a problem.
No, that's usually by the fire engine.
Oh, yeah, that's the way to do it. Yeah. So, did you have the dog there at number 9?
No, they haven't had dogs in a while.
Yeah?
Although that is my nickname.
What do they call you?
Well, it used to be Mad Dog, but now they've just shortened it to the dog.
It's the dog. Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Madden. Pleasure to have you here, Dan. And now you're retired. You still, if there's an alarm, you probably got your little radio, and you still go out there and see if you can help.
Not really.
No.
That's why they call it retirement.
What do you do in retirement? Fisherman, hunter, sportsman, golfer?
Disc golf. Frisbee golf. Yes.
You do frisbee golf?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Are you good at that?
I've taken 20-some years, but I'm finally getting pretty good at it.
Yeah. I see all these young guys doing it, but they can run like in circles and catch things and fly through the air.
That's ultimate.
Oh, yeah.
Golf, yeah.
Oh, this is just you throw it into a basket or something.
Right.
In a garbage can or something.
Yes.
Where do you do that?
There's 4 courses in the area.
And is this competitive? Is there a league and all
that? They have, like, leagues, yes. Tournaments, individuals.
Yeah. And how are you doing in that regard?
I try and keep out of last place.
The dog. It's the dog again, ladies and gentlemen. Dan, great to have you here. Thank you for joining us. And someone out there will play along, and how does that work?
People who want to play the quiz, pick up their phones and dial 1-800-942-5669, and you ask them a qualifying question.
Okay, this is easy. How far would a tennis ball traveling at 120 miles per hour after a Serena Williams serve have traveled before you realized it's coming? Given the time it takes approximately 1/10 of a second for the brain to process what it sees, what the eyes see, so... I don't know how many feet will have traveled, 120 miles per hour, Serena Williams serving, within about how many feet?
10.
Okay. Within 10 feet. Simple. Antonio's on the line here from East Providence, Rhode Island. Hi, Antonio. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
That's good. Fine, thank you. Thanks for asking. Do you follow tennis at all?
From far away, so I'm getting hit.
Yeah. All right, did you hear the question?
I did.
Yeah, 120 miles per hour. The serve is coming towards you. The brain takes 1/10 of a second to process what has just happened. By that time, the ball has traveled how far?
Well, I'm blind, so I wouldn't see the ball coming, but I do have a brain here working.
Yeah.
I could see it. It would be about 10, I guess.
What'd you say?
0.2 seconds.
No, a number of feet.
Number of feet before you realize it's coming.
Yeah, before you actually see it coming.
So in the tennis court, it would be about 2 meters. So
meters. I don't speak meters. I don't speak meters.
7 feet.
7 feet?
Yeah.
Close enough. 10 feet. You got it, Antonio.
Awesome.
Good man. Antonio, this is the Mad Dog here, Dan Madden.
Nice to meet you, Antonio.
He's a firefighter. Antonio, you know how the quiz works?
Yes.
Okay, so 2 of you are a team right now. You work together, you collaborate, and you are a brain trust, and we have various categories, including these.
Current events, people, places, things you should have learned in school had you been paying attention, science, and odds and ends.
Okay, Antonio, you pick the first one, please.
Things you should have learned in school.
Okay, school. Black holes, they suck in or spew out energy?
Suck in,
he says. Suck in?
Yeah.
I agree.
Suck in, yes. All right. Good start.
That's 1 right and 0 wrong.
What's left there, sir?
Current events, people, places, science, or odds and ends.
Mad Dog?
Places.
Places? Okay. Who wears the horsehair wigs in Hong Kong? The solicitors or the barristers? It's in court. Only one is allowed to wear the horsehair wigs, the old British things. Is it the solicitors or the barristers who wear the wigs in Hong Kong?
Couldn't hear the question well, but I'd say the first one.
Solicitors or barristers?
Barristers, yeah.
a barrister is a like a lawyer there, right?
Yeah, they're a little different.
And I know they. I'd go with barrister.
Barrister? Barrister, Antonio?
Oh, yeah.
Barristers. Yes, the barristers. Solicitors. They want them, but they're not allowed to have them.
That's two right and zero wrong.
Going good. What's left?
Current events, people, science, or odds and ends.
Antonio?
Let's try current events.
Current events, right out of the news, maybe not. Should you suck your baby's pacifier or shouldn't you?
Yes.
No.
Oh, yeah.
I don't mean personal
taste.
It
causes...
why not?
Why not, he says. It has been in the news, I guess.
So I definitely heard this, saw this item, and it's supposed to pack antibodies. To your baby.
Okay, I agree with you, Antonio.
Okay, congratulations. You've won the quiz. Holy cow. Good. Pretty darn good, you guys. What a brain trust you are. They could stop here, but couldn't they go on?
They could. They could go on and try to win the mother load.
How would they do that, not being mothers?
Well, they put everything on the line, and you ask them either one or two more questions. One more question. And then they win many more fantastic prizes at the risk of losing them all.
So it's all or nothing.
Correct.
On one question. Here, correct. You gentlemen want to go, Antonio and Mad Dog. You want to go for it, or you want to just take your...
Doesn't matter to me. What do you think, Antonio?
Oh, let's go for it, man.
Let's go for it.
All right. You got to get this one question here from what categories?
People, science, or odds and ends.
People, science, odds and ends. I think Mad Dog is back to you, isn't it?
People, science,
or odds and ends, yeah.
Let's try people.
People, these kind of survey results? Okay with that?
I wouldn't... No.
Yeah?
No, you're not? Okay with that? Want a different one?
Yeah, let's do another one.
Okay, what would you want?
What do you think, Antonio?
For a category?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's go with people.
People? Okay. You okay with that? Now you're okay with it?
I guess so.
Okay.
If Antonio is.
All right. Meeting that perfect someone is church. A good way to meet someone.
Yes or no?
Yes or no? There are various places you can meet, you know, work, school, bars.
Church has got to be a good place.
Church.
To meet.
Is church the best of those ways to meet someone?
I go with that, Mad Dog. I think it is a good place.
Or is it not?
I don't know, Antonio.
Would it, in fact, be
maybe
possibly
not.
The worst place to meet
I don't
someone
think so.
In terms of.
Yeah,
I don't
think
so. I agree
with
someone.
Antonio.
Well, I'm sorry?
Antonio thinks no.
Not
a good place?
Not a
good place.
You're right, it's not. Only 4%, 36% work or school, 11% bars, only 4% church. Congratulations!
Dan, start every day with the What Do You Know way, with a pound of the show's signature What Do You Novo roast from Herb and the Boys at Denver's Novo Coffee Roastery, and then keep madness tenuously at bay with the ghost of Zelda Fitzgerald listening to James Murphy's CD Asheville. Accessorize your spring ensemble with an attractive copper What Do You Know logo charm, custom-made by Angie Simonson at the Weirdly Wired Jewelry in Bellevue, Nebraska. Get the backstory on the Knights of the Dinner Table with Volume 1, Tales from the Vault by Jolly R. Blackburn from Kenzer & Company, and wallow in genuine Americana listening to What Do You Know About Copeland with liner notes by patriotic musicologist Michael Feldman on Nimbus Records. Antonio, find out whether there's a good reason that the average American husband can't hear what his wife is saying in What Do You Know. Test your knowledge with the ultimate collection of amazing trivia, quizzes, stories, fun facts, and everything else you never knew you wanted to know by Michael Feldman from Bristol Park Books. Then feel like a real sophisticate wearing a t-shirt from Ten Chimneys, the National Historic Landmark in Genesee Depot, Wisconsin. Take a walk on the R-rated side with the talking plush version of everyone's favorite animal, and that would be the honey badger, who looks snugly but will rip your head off from thinkgeek.com. And delight friends and foes alike playing What Do You Know the Party Game, including contestants, questions, an enthusiastic audience, and the always warm and cuddly Michael Feldman bobblehead from Out of the Box Publishing, available exclusively at notmuch.com. Congratulations to you both.
Thanks, Mad Dog.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your service. Thank you. Mad Dog Madden, Antonio, hang out and make sure you get all that. Thanks for playing.
Attention La Crosse Feldman fans, what do you know? We'll be at the lovely Viterbo Fine Arts Center in La Crosse on June 8th. Get your tickets by calling 608-796-3100 or by visiting notmuch.com. Tickets for our upcoming shows in Madison right here at Monona Terrace, just go to notmuch.com or call 608-262-2201. And if you're looking to keep the laughs going, click over to notmuch.com. You can join our Facebook family, keep up with Michael's tweets, or play our online quiz. It's all available all the time at notmuch.com. Michael Feldman's What Do You Know is produced at Wisconsin Public Radio for Public Radio International. Michael Feldman, producer international. Adam Friedrich is our producer with assistance from Lyle Anderson, Martin Babcock, and Diana Cook. Our technical director is Tom Blaine with help from Aubrey Ralph, and Brad Kohlberg.
Thank you all. Thanks for coming. Talk to you next week. Thank you all.
PRI, Public Radio International.